hazmat team is called out to an acid spill in Missoula. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetic.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight, Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce talks with a new head of the State Commerce Department. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with the State Attorney General Tim Fox about why he is fighting an internet sales tax. About 1,000 gallons of water-diluted sulfuric, phosphoric, and citric acid spill out of a tank at a Missoula company today, prompting the regional hazmat team to respond. Firefighters and the hazmat team were called out this morning to Spectrum Products, a pool product manufacturer located off of Butler Creek Road, not far from the airport. By midday, they were figuring out how to clean it up. Missoula Rural Fire Department Deputy Chief Chris Newman says the spill was caused when a worker left a valve open.
Basically what had happened was in what they call a rinse tank, accidentally got left on last night, and so there was a residual amount of product in that. And at that point, when it got left on, it overflowed.
Newman says the acids can be hazardous in higher concentrations. The spill was contained inside a company building and no one was injured.
And in other news from around the state, the family of a Great Falls eye doctor who went missing at Lake Elwell in Liberty County last week is asking authorities to continue to investigate his disappearance, saying it's premature to assume that he drowned. The family of 50-year-old John Cum released a statement yesterday asking that the possibility of foul play not be dismissed, considering the timeline of events and Cum's fishing routine. The statement from the family says he called his brother at 6:46 a.m. on June 6 to report he was 15 minutes from the lake, and that his empty boat was spotted 50 yards from the shore at 7:10 a.m. with its motor up. They say he never gets in the water. Liberty County Undersheriff Doug Riggin says there's no evidence of foul play, and everything indicates Cum tried to swim after his boat in the 58-degree water.
A Texas man is facing 2 counts of manslaughter in North Dakota for allegedly causing a traffic crash that killed 2 motorcycle drivers from Montana. Authorities allege that Joshua Everett tried to pass a semi-trailer on State Highway 1804 near Trenton on Thursday night and collided head-on with 2 oncoming motorcycles. The Highway Patrol identified the victims as 20-year-old Blake Reynolds of Fairview, Montana, and 18-year-old Edmund Kimmel of Roundup, Montana. Everett could face up to 20 years in prison if convicted. Court documents do not list an attorney or a hometown for him. He is due back in court on July 9th, at which time he might enter pleas to the charges.
The chief executive officer of Vans Acquisition LLC has left the company less than 3 months after announcing the closure of all 3 Vans locations in western Montana. Greg Regelbruga told the Missoulian yesterday that he left for personal reasons and is working in Seattle. He declined further comment. A holding company for the Florida-based Calady Group bought the bankrupt Vans for $4.5 million last year. Regelbruga came on as CEO in November. He has been a part owner of the company. In the spring, Regelbruga announced the closure of Vans stores in Missoula, Hamilton, and Kalispell and plans to move the company headquarters to Bozeman. Calady Group officials say they want to stabilize the company and hope to re-enter the western Montana markets.
An open house for the Missoula Wayfinding Project is being held at this hour at the Holiday Inn downtown. Missoula began the project 2 years ago to discover ways to better promote the city, make it easier for people to find their way around, and get them to stay longer. The tools include everything from better signs to apps for visitors' smartphones. The merged design firm was hired to come up with the overall design. Project manager John Bosillo says they wanted to focus on what makes Missoula special.
The first was the idea of outdoor, active, natural. That was kind of the first inspiration. Then there was a kind of the arts culture and how that brings a lot of character into the community. And the last was kind of the historic nature of the community, especially in the downtown.
As the result of several meetings with stakeholders this past spring, Bosillo and his staff today presented 3 suggested designs. All divide the city into 5 or 6 districts. For example, the downtown, Fort Missoula, North Reserve, and airport are business districts. One design has a historical motif, one is more modern. Bosillo says the third focuses on Missoula's art and outdoors heritage.
In all of them, we tried to bring in opportunities for local artists to be involved in it. And this one is at a very high level in the identification of districts. So we have a kind of a natural kind of stone sign in front that identifies the, in this case, the Airport Business District. But then attached to it is a sculptural element that can be incorporated kind of as a piece of public art. So at the same time, it's not just a sign. It's creating a landmark, and it's really kind of establishing that artistic element, similar to, you know, the new sculpture that was installed by the parking garage.
Bocio says they will take comments and reaction to the three proposals and come up with a fourth and final decision in how to implement it by the end of the year.
Montana Department of Commerce Director Meg O'Leary is entering her sixth month in the position. Governor Steve Bullock appointed her to the post before the start of his administration in January. O'Leary says after living in Big Sky, Montana for almost a quarter century, she's happy to move back to her hometown of Helena. She previously worked as the Director of Sales and Marketing for a Big Sky resort and tells Capitol reporter Dan Boyce she sees her new job in a very similar light.
I told somebody, let's have maybe the Director of Sales and Marketing for the state of Montana. And that's really what, in a lot of ways, commerce is all about. Our mission is to go out and create jobs and create prosperity for people. And that's what we did in Big Sky. We knew that if we had people coming in and skiing or attending a conference, that we were creating prosperity for everybody in the community. So in a lot of ways, I am shocked at how much it aligns with each other.
When I think of the Department of Commerce, some of the first things I think about is the tourism office and the idea that the Department of Commerce is sort of selling Montana as a tourist destination. That's a big part of what goes on here, but of course it's such a variety of responsibilities and areas. What are the most important elements of this very big office for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one of the things that got me into the interview and put me in a position to be considered for this job was my tourism background. And then I get here, that's a one piece of a very big pie. It's a big piece of the pie, but it's something that I haven't had to focus on. Number one, because the people that are down there are wildly capable, very smart, and have done so much work to be targeted. So in a lot of respects, I said, okay, tourism is good for now. Let me go learn about Community Development Division and the Business Resource Division and all these things that I don't really know about.
Last couple of weeks, the governor unveiled the start of this Main Street Montana project, mm-hmm. and a major piece of what you will be doing. Why don't you tell me about that and your feelings on the opportunities this may provide?
We've had two roundtables, Billings and Missoula, over 200 people in Missoula. We're going to have a plan, a business plan, that we'll announce in the first quarter of the new year. But we will have other deliverables before that, because this is something that really has to be alive. It can't go sit on a shelf, just because we're not doing this just to do this.
And that goal is to find ways to put together a package of maybe legislative proposals and executive directions that will try to increase jobs for Main Street, Montana, is kind of the way this has been branded. Are there things you're hearing over and over again so far?
Yes, they're in the two sessions we've had, from table to table and from town to town, a couple of things rising to the top: transportation. Whether it's availability of getting here and affordability of getting here, or getting our goods and services on a truck or on a train or on a plane out of here, out to the markets. So some of those things we'll never be able to overcome. Like we can't get closer to the Pacific Ocean. So what can we do about that? So that one's rising to the top. Workforce, matching the worker with the right job. How are we going to be ready for this boom going on in eastern Montana? And one thing that came up quite a bit in Missoula was branding ourselves. So making sure that whoever we're selling our goods and services and our products to and our ideas to outside the state, that they understand that we are smart, innovative, culturally rich. We are people that are really a force. And I was kind of surprised in Missoula how many people I heard say they think we're a bunch of hicks. I haven't come across that in the last probably 10 years in my professional life. So that was, I'm curious to see if that will come up in the next three or four cities.
You know, I do want to steer back to tourism here again briefly. We look at our beautiful surroundings, and we have advertisements that feature those. Is there more that Montana can do to sell Montana?
We're also going to keep hammering the message of there's so much to do, stay an extra day. Because that guy that's already here, he's here. And if we can get him to just stay another day, that's going to really increase our inputs.
I've been talking with Meg O'Leary, the new director of the Department of Commerce for the state of Montana. Ms. O'Leary, thanks so much for your time.
Out to Lunch is Montana's longest-standing festival. Every Wednesday from 11 a.m. till 2, Missoula's Karis Park fills with live music and over 20 food vendors. Reporter Ruth Eddy found out what happens when it's time to clean up.
With a lot of food and people comes a lot of trash and leftover food. The Missoula Downtown Association, who puts on the event, has contracts with the Missoula Food Bank and Opportunity Resources to deal with both. When the music stops at 2 and most people start to clear out, Bob Spencer from the Missoula Food Bank is just getting started. Spencer pulls out his wobbly cart and walks from vendor to vendor, collecting clear trays with food circle written in Sharpie on it.
So what do you got here?
I got a cold soup and some bread.
Some hot dogs.
Chicken.
Oh, that came from
Double Front. Chinese. And this is pizza down here.
James Dodge, who's in charge of the program for the Missoula Food Bank, says about half, or 15 vendors, donate what they can't sell. Collecting the clear trays is just the first step.
We'll have volunteers come in, and the volunteers will begin to take each individual tray of whatever it is. They'll kind of look at what we got, and we have these small little, they're like plastic-coated paper trays you would see in a hospital setting or like lean cuisine meal or something like that. And then they'll make a little meal out of what's there. From there, they'll shrink wrap. There's a piece of plastic that goes over and they heat seal that and then we freeze it. And then that's available to our clients to take home as a microwave meal. A mom that's escaping a domestic violence situation, as an example, they may have a temporary voucher for a hotel stay. Well, they don't have a kitchen, but they might have three kids. So this way they can keep these in their refrigerator and microwave them as they need to.
Mel Cummings is also walking around Karis Park with a wobbly cart collecting unwanted food, but not for the food bank. Cummings is an employee of Opportunity Resources, which helps put disabled adults into the workforce. And he's been working Out to Lunch since it began 28 years ago.
I do it because I like having people around.
Cummings has thick glasses and a faded red T-shirt that says Out to Lunch. He is a trash can expert. He knows where to put the cans and how many are needed on a given day.
12 is about a good number. If we're going to be really busy, then I'll put 14 or 15 out. But it takes so long to put them away. I don't want to go higher than 12. Yeah.
Cummings is not alone. He works with five other guys and alongside his boss, Rick Adams.
Well, it's kind of fun. You know, I like Out to Lunch. I like the crew and we have a good time. And so it's kind of special, I think, that we get to do this.
Missoula's Out to Lunch runs every Wednesday from 11 to 2 in Karis Park through the end of August. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Ruth Eddy.
The Marketplace Fairness Act, better known as Internet Sales Tax Bill, recently passed the U.S. Senate without help of Montana Democrats Max Baucus and John Tester. The proposal will soon go before the U.S. House, where it's widely expected to face a more skeptical reception. Montana Republican Representative Steve Daines has already gone on the record opposing the measure. If implemented, it would require states to force e-commerce retailers in other states to collect sales taxes for them. Montana is one of five states that do not have a sales tax. Montana's Republican Attorney General today announced his intention to create a bipartisan coalition with those other sales tax-free states to investigate the constitutionality of the proposal. In tonight's feature interview with Edward O'Brien, Tim Fox explains the impact the proposed internet sales tax measure could have on Montana if implemented. He says the act of collecting that revenue for another state would be, quote, horrendously complicated procedure.
What we're talking about here is imposing upon businesses, internet businesses in particular in Montana, the obligation to collect nearly 10,000 different state and local sales and use taxes, which, as you might imagine, would impose a terrible burden on Montana's businesses, particularly at a time when we can ill afford that kind of a regulatory burden. When we're trying to build the economy here in Montana and create jobs, this would do just the opposite. And it's another classic example of federal overreach that Montanans don't appreciate and don't want.
Are there any estimates out there of what it would cost Montana small to medium-sized businesses to do this?
Well, that's one of the problems here, Ed, is the complete uncertainty with respect to how these laws would be implemented, what impact they would have, and how to gauge it. Congress frequently doesn't know what they're doing or what impact their legislation may have on individuals across this country. We've got many examples over the years of that kind of negligent legislation. But that's the kind of uncertainty that businesses, particularly small businesses, don't need and can't plan for. When a business wants to plan for the future, they've got to have a budget, priorities, and a plan. And when it's difficult or impossible to understand or know how a law like the Marketplace Fairness Act might apply to a Montana business in particular, that kind of uncertainty has a dampening or quenching effect on commerce. And it's a huge concern for me, as it is for all Montanans.
Doesn't the bill require sales tax states to provide other states with sales tax software free of charge?
Well, it requires a number of things, some of which, most of which are not defined. There is no software package yet that's been designed that would manage this kind of a tremendous regulatory burden. When you're talking about 10,000 different taxing authorities and all the various different taxes that they might collect, I think you just picture that in your mind's eye. You know, software is not going to make anything easier. Montanans through the years have been uniform and united in their opposition to sales tax. And there's a lot of good reasons for that, not the least of which is the undue burden it places on businesses to have to collect and disseminate and keep information and taxes that they might raise. When you're doing that for 10,000 other taxing authorities throughout the country, you can imagine the kind of paperwork and burden that that would place. It's very unfortunate, and that's why our congressional delegation, Senators Baucus and Tester and Congressman Daines, are united in opposing this, and that's why I'm opposing it, and the attorneys general of some other states who have no sales tax, Oregon in particular, Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, who is a Democrat, and Alaska Attorney General Michael Garrity are joining me on a letter that we're going to be sending to each congressman and congresswoman, urging them to vote against the Marketplace Fairness Act.
Based on all the reasons you've given us, yes?
Well, the bottom line is, aside from the burden and all of the problems that this would practically give rise to for Montana businesses, it violates the Due Process Clause of the Constitution. There's a lot of legal precedent out there, including cases that have been heard and decided in the United States Supreme Court, that say that this kind of a law is unconstitutional. And, you know, it's not the first time and probably not the last time that Congress would consider a law that's unconstitutional, but that's part of my job, is to stand up for Montanans when Congress overreaches in this way.
You contend this violates due process in the Constitution clause. How so specifically?
If you can imagine, these Montana internet-based businesses, they have no employees in other states or municipalities other than Montana. the only presence they have is on the internet. They don't specifically do anything other than just hold out their services or their products. And then the individuals in the other states and municipalities have to go looking over the internet to find those businesses and to solicit purchases. That kind of situation that Congress is now considering, where they would take that total lack of contact with these other taxing authorities and uniformly require Montana businesses to collect the taxes, keep records, and be subject to the laws of other states. That's specifically prohibited under the Due Process Clause of the United States Constitution. We just can't have it. It's bad for Montana as it is bad for the country.
And furthermore, what's considered a taxable good in one state, like, say, maybe a Hershey bar or something, may be classified as a food in another? Is that correct or not?
Well, what you're saying there illustrates the inconsistencies of tax laws throughout the country in terms of what is taxed, how it is taxed, how much it is taxed, and the requirements for keeping records, and also the kinds of legal ramifications for violating what tends to be, as I said earlier, 10,000 different taxing jurisdictions. I don't know how even my office would keep track of all the myriad of tax laws and regulations and requirements and subtle nuances and legal ramifications, let alone a small business in Roundup or Billings or Ekalaka or somewhere else. So, you know, we're on top of it. We're going to do whatever we can to make sure that this bill is not enacted. And if it is enacted and signed into law by the president, then we'll, in my office as Attorney General, that's part of my job to look at the legal options that I have down the road, and we will certainly reach out to as many states as possible and other attorneys general to bring them on board and hopefully have a united, concerted effort to stop this overreach.
If this is as riddled with problems as you and your colleagues contend, why do you think it made it out of the Senate, sans the support of our Baucus and Tester, so relatively easily?
Well, I guess you can answer your question by looking back through history at all of the ridiculous laws that Congress has passed through the years. Just because a law may have passed through the Senate doesn't mean that it'll make it through the House, or that it, and for that matter, that it'd be signed by the president. And even if it is made into law, that doesn't mean that it's right or fair or constitutional. So, you know, there's, I think, quite a bit of opposition in the House of Representatives. Our system of federalism in the United States not only protects the states from a federal overreach, but it also protects the individual states from other states who might try to impose their laws and regulations on the citizens of Montana, for instance.
Last point, and I'll let you go. Supporters of this internet sales tax bill say states could lose as, or do lose as much as $23 billion a year in uncollected sales taxes. That's a lot of money. Doesn't this, as they say, level the playing field?
Actually, I would disagree. It certainly is unfair, but what we see across the nation are states and municipalities who can't live within their means. Certainly, they're looking for every way to try to raise revenues, basically to pay for the excess, for the tax and spend problems that they've created for themselves. If you look at cities like Detroit or states like California and Texas, who have huge deficits, Montanans know how to live within their means. We don't spend any more than we take in. We shouldn't have to pay for the tax and spend junkies of other states and municipalities. We're not going to be their tax pushers, and I'm going to make sure that we do everything we can to prevent it.
Montana Attorney General Tim Fox, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ed.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide, tonight rain showers are likely with lows in the 40s. Tomorrow calls for a chance of thunderstorms with highs in the 60s. For central Montana, tonight a chance of thunderstorms and rain showers are likely. Lows will be around 50 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy and highs will stick around 65 degrees. And for southwest Montana, tonight rain showers are likely with lows around 45 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms with highs around 65 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Kohler.
Good evening. I'm Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, the area agency on aging for Missoula and Ravalli counties. Tonight, I want to raise the unpleasant but important topic of elder abuse. By defining what it is and giving examples, I hope to increase your awareness of this growing, silent epidemic and suggest ways we can all help stop its spread. Elder abuse refers to intentional or neglectful acts by a caregiver, trusted individual, or stranger that harm an older adult. Most of us think of it as physical abuse. However, there are many other forms of elder abuse. It also includes emotional, psychological, and sexual abuse, financial and material exploitation, and neglect and self-neglect. No older American is safe from this problem, as elder abuse cuts across racial, religious, ethnic, cultural, social, economic, geographic, and gender lines. Worse yet, many older adults don't even realize it is happening to them. With the rapid aging of America, the incidence of abuse will undoubtedly grow. Let me share a couple examples with you. Vicky Bastian, 92, became a prisoner in her own home. After her grandson moved in with her, he started allowing drug dealing and other gang activity to take place in her home. Fearing for her safety, but unsure how to confront her grandson, Vicky resorted to installing an iron security gate on her bedroom door to protect herself and her few belongings. Unfortunately, Vicky's story is not unique. Another case involved an elderly man who had just lost his wife of 65 years. He lived in a rural area and was very lonely. An independent insurance agent befriended him, and over time, the elderly gentleman looked forward to his visits, considering him a friend as well as his insurance agent. The agent started having him sign a variety of papers that he claimed were necessary to update his account. One day, the elderly man took the paperwork to a woman he knew at the credit union, and after reviewing it, she realized the agent had arranged for all the elderly man's payments to go directly to the agent. The agent was reported and convicted of bilking the man out of nearly $200,000. The elderly man was left feeling embarrassed and foolish, but he did get his money back. Not everyone is lucky enough to recover money scammed from them, nor are they able to get out of an emotional or physical abusive situation. In almost 90% of elder abuse and neglect incidents, the perpetrator is known to the elder and is a family member. Two-thirds of the perpetrators are adult children or spouses. Women and older elders are more likely to be victimized. 2 out of every 3 elder abuse victims are women, and in 20 states, roughly 43% are age 80 or older. Financial abuse is on the rise as the population of older adults increases. To me, one of the most unnerving examples is when adult children take money from their parents because they fear the cost of care will leave them no inheritance. A growing attitude that adult children feel entitled to an inheritance raises concerns that they will make bad choices, like limiting care for their parents or unlawfully transferring assets to avoid using their parents' money to pay for care. What can you do about this atrocity of elder abuse? First, learn more about it. On Tuesday, June 18th, Missoula Aging Services and the Missoula Senior Center are hosting a screening at the Roxy Theater of a short video entitled An Age for Justice, Confronting Elder Abuse in America. The event is from 3 to 4 p.m. and includes an interactive discussion by an expert panel with representatives from Adult Protective Services, AARP, law enforcement, and the Western Chapter. Free and open to the public, this is an opportunity for everyone to educate themselves about this painful subject. If you can't attend, contact your local Adult Protective Services to learn more. The other step we can all take is to pay attention to the signs of possible elder abuse. Among them are an older adult's change in behavior, a caregiver who isolates the older adult, an untreated medical condition, an unreasonable use of a person's money or property by someone who has gained that person's trust. It takes a community, neighbors, family, bank personnel, friends, grocery store clerks, and others to be alert for these signs. If you suspect any form of abuse, call 1-800-551-3191 to reach your local area agency on aging. They can refer you to the local adult protective services so you can submit a report, which can be done anonymously. Reach them during normal business hours. This is Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services. As always, thanks for listening.
Susan Kohler is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetic, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.